Offering master's degrees in a variety of disciplines from the Hickory, Asheville, and Columbia, South Carolina campuses. Details at lr.edu/graduate. This is WFAE News.
Support for NPR comes from the Cy Sims Foundation, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts since 1985. CySimsFoundation.org.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Earlier this summer, Charlotte played host to two comic and sci-fi conventions. And if you were downtown in early June during one of those conventions, you may have seen a strange sight. Lots of people, adults, crowding the bars and walking on the streets dressed up as their favorite comic book heroes. These conventions take place all over the country. And this week, San Diego will host the biggest of them all, Comic-Con. With thousands of people attending and participating, clearly something is going on. Some of these people refer to themselves as geeks, and they've gotten the attention of a group of psychologists, a few of whom describe themselves as geeks. A subset of those psychologists are headed west this week to present a panel discussion at Comic-Con called Geek Therapy, How Superheroes Empower Us All. Perhaps dressing up as a superhero is the result of the bullying or marginalization that some self-described geeks feel, or are they bullied because they take all this too seriously? No matter, the psychologists I mentioned say there is therapeutic value in dressing like a favorite character from movies and video games, comics, and more, and we've invited them to explain it all this hour. Josue Cardona is a nationally certified counselor and licensed professional counselor associate in private practice, a self-described geek therapist. He hosts the Geek Therapy podcast on
geektherapy.com.
Geektherapy.com. Yep. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
But you've told me just moments ago that you have never dressed up as a character.
I never have.
And you call yourself a geek. What's up with that?
There's a lot to it.
All right, we'll talk about it later. Dr. Dave Verhagen is a licensed psychologist and author of, or co-author of, 6 books, including Parenting the Millennial Generation and Therapy with Young Men. He is co-founder of Southeast Psych, along with Dr. Frank Gaskill, who is also a licensed psychologist, specializing in Asperger's and how technology and kids can interface successfully. He's also the author of Max Gamer, a graphic novel about Asperger's. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
How'd you both get off at the same time, in the same practice? We have defined this hour as an examination of geek culture. Is that fair?
So I created this thing called Geek Therapy because there is a subculture of self-identified geeks.
They call themselves geeks.
Yeah. I think everybody in this room, right, the three of us, would absolutely identify as a geek.
You're all psychologists. Why would they demean themselves like that? Because geek is a term that's not necessarily associated with goodness.
Exactly. And that's a good point. I think over the years, we've taken ownership of that name.
Okay.
Right? So it used to be derogatory, and we didn't want to be treated that way. And then at one point we said, wait a minute, we love the things that we love, and we love them the way that we love them, so we're going to take that word back. I think it's a lot of how the LGBT community took the word queer and just took ownership of it.
Okay.
You know? Some people may think it's derogatory, but...
You can't hurt us with a word we embrace.
I guess so. Yeah, yeah.
So define it. What does it mean to be a geek? In case there might be somebody out there who is one and doesn't realize it, or aspires to be one.
A closeted geek.
Yeah, aspires to be one but doesn't know what the steps are.
Yeah. So I think there's two different definitions of the word. One is the more common, you love video games and comic books and sci-fi and fantasy, play Dungeons and Dragons, read comic books, things like that.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one is just someone who is just really passionate about something. So you can be a politics geek, you can be a financial geek, a fashion geek, you know, and
it's
people use
who's
that term.
Really, really, really into something.
Exactly, exactly. And you study it, you know a lot about it, you just love it, and you're not afraid to tell people that that's your passion and you're really interested. And then many times you're almost an expert in it.
You geek out.
And you geek out, yeah.
That sounds like that doesn't. There's nothing wrong with that. It seems to me. I mean, you can probably go over the board and bore your friends and your spouse with it. But nonetheless, you're having a good time, and is that what's important?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not allowed to have Star Wars stuff in my house. It's all in my office.
I'm actually kind of concerned. I'm kind of concerned about you, Dr. Gaffney. I'm concerned about me actually, because I've read through your resume, which, by the way, your resume and that of your partner here, Dr. Verhagen, are unlike any resume I have ever seen. On this program, I get a lot of resumes, and yours are both done as they would be as a comic book. It's a comic book resume,
yeah,
with pictures and all the crazy font faces and stuff like that. But I read through yours, and it seems that all of your favorite. Let me see. No, it's yours, Dr. Verhagen. Oh. All of your favorite TV shows and your favorite movies are mine.
What is that? Which ones?
Well, I love Justified.
Oh, yeah.
I loved Lost when it was on television. Lord of the Rings, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, these are things that I like.
Are you a Walking Dead fan?
That's the question.
I've never seen it.
Oh, come on, gosh. Mike Collins. Come on. That honestly, I think that's the best show on television.
I have to draw the line someplace.
Well.
So is the word geek a substitution for the word nerd? I mean, if you're a computer nerd, are you a geek? A computer geek.
They're used interchangeably. Absolutely.
Geek, to me, used to be somebody who bit the heads off of live chickens. Isn't that the
circus?
I've never heard that.
The circus geek.
I was thinking Ozzy Osbourne.
I thought that was the circus definition.
No, well, maybe. I mean, yeah. I would probably rank myself on the geek continuum lower than Frank or Josue, but I wouldn't consider myself to be a nerd. Now, Frank might consider me to be a nerd, but I don't necessarily see those things as synonymous. I think we tend to think of geek as, like Josue was saying, somebody who's really into something. You know, if you're into some pop culture element, you're just geeking out about it. You really like it. A lot of Star Wars or superhero or sci-fi kinds of themes, those are the kinds of things that we think of when we think of being a geek.
In fact, the two of you are in practice together, and you have decorated your office in this sci-fi. You even have costumed characters, full-size.
Lucas Studios, Vader, and Stormtrooper.
And you've embraced this as a means of therapy, which we're going to talk a lot about. But where did you stumble on this idea to do that and to decorate the office that way? Is it because it makes the people who come to you, and I don't know who they are, more comfortable, welcomed?
Well, we have a practice that's fairly large. We have 30 therapists in two locations, and our tagline is Psychology for All. And the idea with it is that it's making psychology approachable to everybody. So when you walk in the door, we've got a small video production studio. Then you see Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. Then you walk around the corner, you see books, and on the walls are superheroes and movie posters.
R2-D2's at
the reception. Right, R2-D2, yeah. Exactly. And so the whole idea is to make psychology accessible, make it fun, make it something that is something that someone comes in and says, I want to be a part of this, or I think this is actually a fun place to be, rather than the traditional therapy office that looks more cold and sterile.
Do you specialize in a certain kind of patient that requires this kind of activity?
No,
you don't. So anybody can come there, and they don't feel odd?
Well,
looks like an arcade, I guess, in a way?
Yeah. The biggest feedback that I've gotten is, I have to tell my friends about this. I want to come just hang out here. Oh. And when you walk down the hallways, there are movie posters. Uh-huh. Every clinician has a caricature drawn of them related to their favorite superhero. And so you have this experience of almost going to a cool Lego store or going to a small Comic-Con. And it's unlike any other practice you've probably ever been in.
So I go in with some kind of a psychological problem that I may feel bad about that I need help for, and I realize the doctors need help more than I do.
Exactly. Well, Frank's case, that's
yes,
true.
Certainly in mine.
Although Comic-Con is in San Diego, you say, Josue, that Charlotte is the geek capital of the world.
Well, I think it's specifically the geek therapy capital of the world.
Okay, right.
Because there are clinicians like Frank and Dave and myself here, and I don't think there's a concentration like that anywhere else. Southeast Psych is a unique location.
How did this come to be?
I do not know. I think Frank and David may have a lot to do with that because when I first came here, I knew about them. You know, they're making this statement with their practice and they're putting their personalities out there. And I caught wind of it. I saw it. I was aware of it. And I thought, first of all, it inspired me to do the same. Mm-hmm. And then when I had the opportunity to come to Charlotte, I thought, well, that's not a bad place to be the kind of therapist that I want to be because it's already happening.
All three of you, as I said, are going to Comic-Con in San Diego later this week to participate in a panel discussion, which I think you're originating. This is your idea, right? It's your idea, Josue?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Geek Therapy, How Superheroes Empower All of Us. And before we talk about that, talk about Comic-Con. For those people who have never been, who don't know what it is, who have never been to any of these comic conventions, including the Heroes Con, which I think is here. I know it's here. I think it's called Heroes Con.
Yep.
What goes on at these conventions? Who comes? What's on display? What's the convention about?
So all of the things that you mentioned before that you like, that you have in common with mm-hmm, Dave, mm-hmm. It's a place where you can celebrate all of that. Mm-hmm. It's the only place where you can, it's like a rally and a parade for all of the pop culture and media that you really like. So there's a lot of actors, there are artists, whether they be authors, comic book artists, movie stars, TV stars, they're all here in force. And people who love that, that's where they go to rally and celebrate that and share it with people who love the same things that they do.
And they dress up
as attendees. Do. I would say, I mean, I've been to a few cons and I would say it's not even the majority of people that dress up, but there is a subculture within the Comic-Con community that absolutely embraces what they call cosplay.
Did this start with the Star Trek conventions that happened years and years and years ago that William Shatner used to go, and I think he was asked a question at one by a fan, and he told the fan to get a life because it was just right. A TV show. Is that how it started, or does Comic-Con predate that?
Comic-Con has, I think, a very long history going back to the 70s, and I think it's in pockets, right? And just like maybe we're the Geek Therapy, we started something here. Maybe in 10 or 20 years, we can have our own conference, mm-hmm. right? I think the same thing happened. There's Charlotte actually has a meetup group that has over 1,000 members, and it's called the Charlotte Geeks, right? So that's just people getting together and loving the same thing. So I think that when you start doing that and it starts getting bigger, you need to organize it somehow.
When did it become acceptable for people to, and maybe it's not, but when did it become acceptable in the eyes of the person participating to dress up like their favorite characters and then go out in public? Because, you know, when I was walking up and down the streets here in June when the other convention was actually here, and there were literally hundreds of people on the street in superhero costumes.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, HeroCon is the, here in Charlotte, mm-hmm. it's the longest freestanding comic book convention mm-hmm. in the U.S., mm-hmm. And it's a guess, but back when Star Wars was released, May of 77, people were working on costumes back then. And so then you start seeing these big movie blockbusters, people standing in line dressed up. When Harry Potter came out, everybody was dressed up in line. And I think with the advent of the internet, seeing YouTube videos of people doing this stuff, that it's just a thing that people do. And there are a lot of people who judge people who do that, and that's okay. But when you get enough geeks together in mass, it's fun. It's cool.
I'll tell you a story about me and Frank.
Yes, this is a good one.
The last Star Wars movie that was released.
Episode 3.
At the time, I had a Volkswagen Beetle convertible, and Frank dressed up as Darth Vader. And it was at Stonecrest, and there was a line literally wrapped around the building. Mm-hmm. And Frank stood up in the back of my car, and we played the
Empire Strikes Back theme.
And drove through the line.
I was waving a lightsaber.
While he was waving a lightsaber, Fox News was there,
helicopter
other
over
local
us.
News, and people lost their minds yeah. about it.
They
people
cleared,
were screaming. People
they cleared
were,
the handicap spot for us and pulled the Volkswagen right up to the entrance, and everybody started dancing, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
And then when we got into the theater, they had reserved us the best seats in the middle of the theater. It was epic. And then the next morning on Fox News Rising, uh-huh. somebody was making fun of the Darth Vader guy they saw on the news, and that was me.
And you're a brave man to admit it. We're going to come back in a second and talk more about this. And stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte-Mecklenburg Stormwater Services. The deadliest place to be during a flood is in a vehicle. From behind the wheel, water levels are unknown. Don't drive through floodwater or bypass barricades. Turn around. Don't drown. Details, stormwater.sharmec.org. Have you taken a look at your trash lately? You might discover that you're throwing away a lot of food. In America, we waste about 600 pounds of food per person per year. That's over $1,000 worth of food. And if we wasted just 5% less, we could feed 4 million people. We're going to talk about food waste tomorrow and ways to reduce it. And we'll hear from the author of American Wasteland and for those working on it at an institutional level tomorrow morning at 9.
On the next Jay and Reem show, the Senate debate over eliminating the filibuster, block nominees, partisan rancor, and the future of the filibuster.
Join us for the Diane Reem Show this morning and every weekday morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on listener-supported public radio. We're 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about geek culture and geek culture as therapy or geek therapy. We've already defined geek. In case you're just joining us, it is somebody who is really into something, but in this case, mostly into what they see in movies, what they read about in comic books, what they experience in video games, what they see on television, and are willing to attend conventions like Comic-Con this week in San Diego and dress up in many cases as their favorite characters from these shows. And three people who are from Charlotte are going to Comic-Con to host a panel discussion called Geek Therapy, How Superheroes Empower All of Us, and they are our guests. Josue Cardona is a nationally certified counselor, host of the Geek Therapy podcast on geektherapy.com. And Drs. Dave Verhagen and Frank Gaskell are licensed psychologists and co-founders of Southeast Psych, also authors of several different books. The people who dress up, you just said, I think, Dr. Gaskell, that they risk being made fun of or derided by people who don't.
Or want it.
Or want it?
Sometimes.
But on the other hand, it strikes me as being very brave and pretty daggone healthy to do it.
Mm-hmm. We've attended several conferences, everything from the American Psych Association Conference in D.C. or Boston, San Francisco, and also local things like the Buddy Walk. And I will take my Darth Vader costume. My buddy Andrew King will wear his Stormtrooper costume. And when we put those on, we get mobbed, just mobbed.
So you like the attention.
Well, yes, I'm kind of a bit of an attention seeker, but
and you like this? Why, Doctor?
Well, it's also a method by which you can draw a lot of attention to something you care a great deal about. And so we all care a lot about psychology, and we're linking psychology with some cool, fun things that makes it interesting, more fun, more accessible. And people are able to engage it in a real way. It's not just sitting down and saying, hi, I'm a therapist, I do this. It's, hi, I love Star Wars, you do too? That's cool, let's talk about that. And it builds rapport so quickly.
Let's talk about geek therapy. Are you saying that acting out as a superhero or adopting some other characteristic of geek culture, and maybe it's, I don't know what, maybe it's computer geek culture, maybe you're just obsessed by code, I don't know. That is therapy? Is that what you're saying, that is therapy? Or do you use superheroes and other elements of pop culture as therapy or as an entry point to therapy?
Yeah, we use it as a, like Frank said, oh, we both have this in common, we can talk about that, and then we can talk about the difficult stuff later. Mm-hmm. Because maybe you come into therapy, your parents brought you in, you don't want to be there, right? But you see that there are cartoons on the wall, and there's comic books in the waiting room, and there are video games there, and that's an entry point.
So is that why someone would choose to come to see one of the three of you as opposed to somebody else? Because they have an obsession or they have an interest in comic book characters. I mean, if I didn't have an interest in any of that, if I don't consider myself to be a geek in any area, computer, sports, whatever it may be, I just have a problem I like to talk about, or my parents think I need to talk about. I would come to you and I would relate to you because of these geek things on the walls?
Not necessarily. It's really that we've tried to create a special experience so that it's not necessarily that we're drawing geeks. In fact, the majority of my clients, I would say, are not geeks. They're actually pretty cool people that wouldn't be. I'm not to say Josue's laughing like, what do you mean I'm not cool? that are into other things, but wouldn't line up or
consider themselves. How do you use that as an entry point then, if they're not interested?
Right. Well, it's part of like what Josue is saying is that it's kind of a cool place in general. You see Darth Vader, you see a video studio, you see all this stuff. But the other part is that we use those themes sometimes in therapy. I've had people come in and say, why do you have all these superheroes down the hallway? Mm-hmm. And I'll say, well, superheroes are cool and they're fun, but they're also strong and resilient and they have to do with courage. And so we just think that's a cool theme to have here. Mm-hmm. And sometimes just even that kind of conversations opens up other things, or at least identifies us with lining up with more of the positive things. We kind of line up with a tradition of positive psychology, which focuses on what's right with people, what's good with people, where people can be strong and get stronger and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
Let me quiz you real quick.
Oh, gosh.
Uh-oh.
This is a public session. You realize that, don't you?
You've seen Star Wars, right?
I have.
Okay. Do you know the difference between a Jedi and a Sith? Sith would be like Darth Vader back then.
Yeah. Well, the Jedi are the Sith are the dark side of the Force, and the Jedi are the lighter side of the Force, the undark side.
This is how I use this in therapy.
All right.
I'll ask parents that, and I'll ask a child that. And they usually give that answer, and I'll say, no, that's not it. It's not good versus bad. Jedis show self-control. Sith attempt to control everything else. And if you attempt to control something that's outside of your control, it's going to make you anxious, frustrated, fearful, which is the path to the dark side. If you demonstrate self-control, it's the path to the good side.
This sounds like politics to me.
Well, that's funny. But kids hear that, and it clicks. I need to let go and stop controlling things that are outside my power.
And not only kids, an adult who grew up with that, they understand that. Now you're speaking their language, and they understand it. Maybe a lot quicker.
Yes. We define geek. Is there such a thing as geek culture? Because to be a geek doesn't necessarily mean that you're into Star Wars.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that you collect and know everything about a particular comic series. It could be that you know every batting average known to man.
Yes.
It could mean almost anything. So what is geek culture? Because if I'm a sports geek and you're a comic book geek, we don't have much to talk about, do we?
Exactly. So there's definitely a dividing line, right? I think we can both agree that we are passionate about something, mm-hmm. but maybe we wouldn't have that much to talk about. And then that's why the actual geek culture, the first definition that I gave, is that shared experience and that shared interest.
Is this a male thing, or do women
absolutely
take part?
Absolutely not. No.
My daughter's going with us to Comic-Con, mm-hmm. my oldest daughter, and she will out-geek all of us. And she probably will dress up, and she is absolute geek and loves it.
My son Maddox turns 8, mm-hmm. and he's flying out to Comic-Con that morning. Mm-hmm. And my daughter Olivia, they're both dressing up, and you won't know who these are, but Commander Fox and Ahsoka Tano. And they're going to dress up and run around the panel and hand out Daddy's Twitter card.
And why do you think I don't know these people?
You'd be right. What would lead you to that conclusion?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you specialize, I believe, in working with young men, Dr. Verhagen, mm-hmm. 16 to 24, to help them excel in their lives. These are people who struggle with behavioral, emotional, or substance issues. Are these kinds of things, these three things, that the provenance of young men? Why have you chosen to focus on that gender and that age group?
Well, absolutely. It's those things that you mentioned are the kind of the things that you expect when a young man walks in the door. They're going to have problems with behavior or with substance issues or that kind of thing. And what's happened over time for me is that I've just become good at working with young men. It's sort of like I resonate with mm-hmm. I get where they are developmentally. They're at a place where they're not quite independent adults, but they're old enough to be a little more autonomous. And so it's a developmental stage of life where people are still under their parents' roof or under on their parents' nickel, but they're old enough to be making their own decisions. And so it's a real important transitional time of life where they're trying to think through, what kind of man do I want to be? Where do I want to go? What does that look like? And, you know, some of them come in and there's some diagnosable condition, and others, it's really just, I need to figure myself out and figure out where I'm going. So that's definitely the theme. Those are the themes you see a lot.
And do you use this so-called geek therapy or geek experience in all of these cases or of these cases?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you know when that would be a good thing to use?
Well, it's like any good therapy where you get in sync with somebody, you find out what they're interested in, you find out what they like, what they are spending their time on. And if it happens to be video games, if it happens to be movies, if it happens to be television shows, mm-hmm. you just kind of line up with that early on from a rapport building standpoint, but also kind of some of the themes that come out of that you use.
Your partner, Dr. Verhagen, I understand, has seen Star Wars 450 times.
It's like an exponential curve. Every time he says it, it's like he must stay at home and just watch it over and over again. But yeah, he says he watches it. I know that he's watched it in the hundreds of times.
It's background noise now.
Yeah. And why have you done this?
The real story?
Yeah. Sure. Don't lie. This is radio.
All right.
No one lies on this program.
My dad was a very, very busy man. And I'm an only child and lived in Iran. And so I'd often sit on the floor and play Legos. And I would ask my dad, will you play with me? Will you play with me? And he'd say, in a minute. It was always a little delay. And then May of 77, my dad suggested we go see this new movie called Star Wars. And when we came out of the movie, he said, that Darth Vader was cool. And the precursor to that story is one time he did sit down and build Legos with me. And my dad was a little bit Asperger's. And he would build a Lego set that belonged in a store. It was unbelievable. He built this dinosaur that I was like, wow. And I thought, as a 7-year-old, I could do the same thing. Built this really crappy little car. Burst into tears and ran to my room. And I thought, well, I'll never be good enough. So when my dad took me to go see Star Wars and we connected around Darth Vader, it all clicked. So my office is filled with Imperial Legos, Darth Vader's everywhere, and it's sort of an unconscious, I want to be accepted kind of thing. But it's turned into my passion, which also led me into Asperger's as well.
Which, and I want to talk about Asperger's a little bit later on in the program, but because I know you specialize in that, and what you have to say about that is really very interesting and very hopeful, it seems to me, for people who have children with Asperger's. But what you just said might be hopeful, or if not hopeful, at least comforting, to parents who look at their children who seem at least temporarily obsessed by something, whether it's playing. Like my brother used to buy a record, and he would play it. You have no idea.
Yeah.
He would play it until the vinyl wore out.
Oh. I was
over and over and over.
I was that
he
guy.
Was a DJ.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there are kids today who play video games hours on end. There are kids who now that because of videos and the DVDs and downloads will watch the same movie over and over and over. And parents become concerned about this. Should they be?
Well, you know, it's like anything. If you do it too much, it could be a problem. It's not necessarily the content of it. It's how much you're doing it, whether it's got its place in your life and some balance. It's kind of like fire. Is fire good or bad? It's good if it's in your fireplace. It's bad if it's on your wall. Same thing with video games. Video games have a lot of benefits. They're cool things. But they can be bad if a kid's holed up in his room and playing 6 hours a day or 8 hours a day, that kind of thing. Same thing with anything. Anything that you're too immersed in and doing too much that takes balance out of your life can be a bad thing.
But I don't want to put words in your mouth. You had this bonding experience with your father over mm-hmm. Star Wars and Darth mm-hmm. Vader, and then you've gone on to watch it several hundred times since.
Right.
Is that because you're trying to repeat that experience? Is it because you're trying to re-grab that experience and reconnect again with that because it was a pleasurable moment in your life?
There's a lot of nostalgia to it. And also it's more of a routine and a ritual. Just like every summer Spike TV shows the Star Wars series. Every time I go to the beach, I take Star Wars and Jaws. And I watch those two movies several times.
You take Jaws to the beach?
Oh, it's worse than that. My buddy Andrew and I do this most summers. We watch Jaws and wait until it gets dark, turn off the lights, run down to the beach, swim out to where you can't touch, and come back in. And then you are guaranteed you know you're alive at that point.
You are not well.
Excellent.
Since we have three psychologists and clinical people here who deal with geek therapy in their practice when appropriate, and because you came here and knew about these two other doctors, Josue, is this where it started? Does this kind of therapy have its genesis in Charlotte?
So I coined sort of the term geek therapy, but I have found that other people have used it in the past. And because it's just the same idea that we're presenting here, which is just bonding psychology with popular culture and geek culture. It's not new, right? There are actually there are a lot of books that actually touch on using different types of characters with clients in different ways. Mm-hmm. I've just tried to, I guess the one thing I've done is kind of bring people together. So that's why I interview people on my show, and I wanted to meet Dave and Frank and see their office, and I try to connect all of these people. And at Comic-Con there will actually be a lot of psychologists there giving different presentations, and I'm sure there will be many, many more just there to enjoy the show.
You talked about positive psychology a minute ago, and for a superhero to exist, there must be a villain. And otherwise, why, you don't need the superhero. You know, he can come do your windows for you, I suppose, in a quick amount. But there are people who dress up as the villains, people who dress up like Darth Vader. Why, there's one sitting right here. What does that say about the person that you are attracted to the dark people in the series as opposed to Luke Skywalker or Princess Leia?
That is a great question.
It is.
I think for people in video game play where you can choose mm-hmm. which side you go down, there are some video games where you can choose to be a good character or an evil character. People do that at these conferences. People decide which way they're going to dress up. I think it is a way of expressing an aspect of a person, or maybe they're feeling like this is their opportunity to kind of act out in this sort of safe, cool way, where maybe they're not a bad guy in real life, but mm-hmm. they want to be a bad guy. I think Frank kind of identifies with that. Frank's a good guy, but I think he likes the Darth Vader vibe and the Darth mm-hmm. Vader costume because it's a way to be kind of this cool villain.
There's that, but there's also, for me, the important part of Darth Vader is his whole transformation. There's a redemption in the end. And that's, again, Darth Vader, no hope, no hope, but in the very end, he transforms and he returns to being a Jedi. And I think that's always the hope.
Well, for instance, you watched Justified.
Absolutely.
It's a great show.
It is a great show.
On FX. And although I like the lead character, who is a law enforcement guy, who's a little warped, my favorite character they killed off several years ago, and I can't think of her name, but she was a mountain woman. And,
yes.
She was just evil incarnate, and she would...
The mom who was the matriarch of this.
Who has gone on to several other series. She's on a sitcom right now.
She won the Emmy for,
her
portrayal.
Fabulous character.
Yes.
And she was just evil. Now, what does that say that you're attracted as a person to that character? That's why you watch, because you want to see what this mad woman is going to do next.
That show is so great with bad guys. Every season they have...
Well, the bad guys are terrific.
The best bad guys. Yeah. And I'll tell you, if people aren't watching it, they need to watch it just for the bad guys.
Right.
But to your point... We love the bad guys, and we love bad guys that have some nuance, some texture to them. They have a little bit of connectedness to our own experience. So she's not just this two-dimensional villain. She's a mom. She cares about her kids.
Right.
She is somebody that wants to do what she thinks is right. And so we connect to that as well.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back with more. How am I going to cover all this ground? But we'll do it fast. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Audi of Charlotte, presenting a selection of luxury vehicles committed to customer service and satisfaction, East Independence Boulevard inside the 485 Beltway. Audi, truth in engineering. Information at audioofcharlotte.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the Senate Majority Leader takes steps that could dramatically change filibuster rules, blocked nominees, partisan rancor, and the future of the filibuster, all coming to a head on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Dr. Sid Wolf on the effort to ensure the safety of prescription drugs and his 40-year career as a consumer health advocate. Perhaps you'd like to join our conversation. Well, now's the time at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Hi, I'm John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway on WFAE. We're a fast-paced look at the news of the day where you'll hear in-the-moment conversations to take the facts and frame them in ways that make you think. We've got great guests, experts, people affected by the news, all part of the conversation, all part of your conversation, too, we hope. The Takeaway, Monday through Thursday at 2 here on WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Josue Cardona, a nationally certified counselor, host of the Geek Therapy podcast, Dr. Dave Verhagen and Dr. Frank Gaskell, licensed psychologists and co-founders of Southeast Psych. Dr. Verhagen is the author of Therapy with Young Men. Dr. Frank Gaskell, the author, among other things, of Max Gamer, which is a comic book for young people with Asperger's, which we will talk about. This dressing up in costume is called cosplay. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have several people here who have we have a caller who does cosplay. She dresses up in costume characters. I'm going to bring her into the conversation. So put your headphones on because Amber says she has 45 costumes. Is that right, Amber?
That is correct, Mike.
And you do this because?
Well, a variety of reasons. Well, first of all, my name is Amber Olenea, and that's my cosplay name, which was actually my middle school Dungeons & Dragons name. So I have a long culture, a long history with it, the geek subculture. So I've dressed as everything from a female Iron Man to Chitara from the Thundercats to Power Girl. And I think, Mike and guests, that part of the reason that I do it is very empowering and exciting to embrace and take on these characters that I just love.
That was going to be my next question, because the three of you are going to Comic-Con to do a session called Geek Therapy, How Superheroes Empower All of Us. Obviously, she feels empowered, so tell me how that works.
That's good, because what I wanted to do at the panel was not talk about why it works, but so much how and examples of it. It's okay. Like what Amber just said is a perfect example. Somehow, just putting on that costume, you feel different. I recently spoke to someone, she's out in Seattle, she does this program called Tiny Superheroes, and she makes capes for kids who are sick, and just the effect that that has on the family. She says that these little kids, some of them are toddlers, and they haven't seen a movie with a superhero or read a comic book. They put on that cape and they think they can fly. They start acting like they can fly, and they start making these poses.
Why do they act like that if they have never seen a movie like that? Because why wouldn't they put the cape on and be a vampire?
Right now, where we are in culture, I think the superhero concept is just permeated into the culture. It's so ingrained that we associate it with that positive aspect of just being more.
Well, that was going to be my next question, because if superheroes and dressing up as superheroes is an empowering thing, if it gives you power, and obviously it does for Amber All, because she says it does, and you just said that it does, these superheroes, except for Batman and maybe a couple of others out there, all have superpowers. Batman does not. He's just an ordinary guy who has super costumes that enable him to do certain things. Are you empowered by putting on a Superman costume when you can't fly, you can't stop bullets with your hand, you don't have X-ray vision, you can't leap tall buildings with a single bound, etc.?
But the character has such a rich history. How many decades of Superman comics are there? And so many different versions of the story. And he's a character who is alone in the world, for example. So he feels isolation. And a lot of people can relate to that. And he has to face some of the worst things that come to the world because he's the only one who can. And many times our clients find themselves in positions like that, and we find ourselves in positions where we can do something about something, and there's these difficult choices, and someone can identify with Superman stories, for example, mm-hmm. and different situations that he's been in, and relate to it or be inspired by it.
And that's how you use Max Gamer.
Correct.
And that's why you wrote this comic book, Dr. Gaskill, about Max Gamer. This you specialize, or you work a lot with, young people who have Asperger's. And for those, we've done many shows on Asperger's.
Oh, sure.
For those people who don't know, what are the symptoms?
Well, I never call it a disorder or a syndrome. I think it's an awesome brain, and it's more highly evolved. And it's typically an obsessive interest, a special interest, difficulty reading, recognizing social cues, and feeling different in the world, mm-hmm. trouble making friends, but want to make friends.
And their differences, their specialty, what really turns them on, and they become experts in some of
yes,
these things
they do.
In some cases, it becomes a turnoff for some people because they just don't understand, why are you so obsessed with this? And so as a result, because they can't read social cues and because they feel like outsiders, they are. And you've written this comic book mm-hmm. that tells them how special they are and, in a way, what they can do
right.
to fit in and what others around them can do to accept them.
That's right. There's a little girl that myself and my colleague Mary B. Moore have been working with for a long time, and she really struggled and is at a very nice private school here in town. We went into her class, and this was, I believe, her second grade. She put together a PowerPoint presentation about what Asperger's is, how she manages with it, how she feels she's a superhero because of it. Teachers were crying. Parents were crying. Kids were cheering her. I've had kids sit by themselves in cafeterias. Nobody would invite them. They give their presentation on what Asperger's is, and they become the most popular kid in school.
Wow. It's about understanding, and then you can't accept
yes.
until you understand, I guess.
Correct.
Particularly if you're on the outside looking in. If you're the kid who doesn't have Asperger's
yes.
and you're looking at a young person who does, you go, oh, they're weird.
Right.
Stay away until you understand
that's right.
that it's an asset.
Tony Atwood says, people will say people suffer from Asperger's. And the answer is no, they don't. Aspies suffer the humans.
Mr. Spock.
yes.
Mr. Spock.
An awesome Aspie.
It's an Aspie.
Yes.
At least to us.
Yes.
He comes from a culture.
Comes from Aspie Planet.
And a lot of famous people, evidently, who have contributed mightily to
yes.
humanity have been Aspie.
Clay Marzo out in Hawaii. We've become friends through Facebook. He's one of the top surfers in the world. And his mom, Jill Marzo, and I have been talking back and forth, and I've created an Aspie character based on him and is also going to be in a software program coming out next year. But his special interest is surfing, and if you focus on that, why do you need to socialize the same way?
So I want to repeat what you said, because a lot of parents who have kids with Asperger's despair.
Sure.
And you say that Asperger's is awesome.
Yes.
A better type of different.
More highly evolved. Ask Mark Zuckerberg. Bill Gates.
Okay. Now, you focus, Dr. Verhagen, on the positives of a person, and you point to superheroes and their many positives and strengths. And you say that people grow more in their strengths than in their weaknesses. I never thought about that. That's kind of an interesting thought.
Yeah, and the research proves that. If you look at there was a study that the Gallup organization did that took several decades, and a few million people were in the study, and then there have been other studies along the way mm-hmm. that say if a person focuses on their weakness, they'll grow just a little bit. If they grow or focus on their strength, they'll grow almost exponentially.
How do you find your strength? A lot of people struggle with that.
Mm-hmm. They absolutely do. And your strength can be an academic strength. It can be a physical strength, like an athletic ability. It can be a social strength. It can be an area of interest. And some of that is just trial and error, but some of that is needing a guide or somebody that can help you do that. That's part of what Frank and I do, and Josue as well, is that we help people discover where they're strong and where they can be stronger.
So, since we're talking about geek culture, if you have a child who knows everything in the world about dinosaurs, if you yourself are fixated on a TV show or a movie or characters in video games, if you know all of the Avengers and all of their backstories, etc., you shouldn't be discouraged, and you shouldn't discourage this kind of behavior. You should encourage it.
Well, possibly. Part of what we're trying to say, though, is that anything out of balance is maybe a concern. So we're not just saying if someone has one area, that's the only thing they should do, and they shouldn't work on other areas like learning how to socialize better and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But what we are saying is build on what's right. Build on where there's strengths. And so if a kid has a special interest or a special ability, let's find that and build on it. Frank's outstanding in that. I'm going to brag on him a little bit and say that what Frank's doing in the world of Asperger's is revolutionary. It really is. He's doing some things in terms of how people are thinking about Asperger's that is drawing attention nationally, internationally. And that way of thinking about, let's look at what's good about these kids, where they're strong, and capitalize on that and help other people see that in a good light is really a powerful thing.
There's a woman right now, if this is playing live, is listening from Baghdad, Iraq. Her name's Dalia Abbas, and she has an Asperger's son, an autistic son, and she considers herself Aspie. And she's bringing Max Gamer and positive psychology to this board in Iraq to build on strength over there.
I also want to point out something else that I read about you guys yesterday, and I think I have this right. No. This is along. If she's listening in Iraq right now, there's a show on HBO or Showtime called Web Therapy, which I have watched because it's just quirky and amazing, and it's completely ad-libbed. But the premise is that Lisa Kudrow is a therapist, and she only sees patients on Skype for 15 minutes. That's it. And she has some weird interactions. You use the internet for therapy sessions.
I use the internet to communicate my message. And if it's within North Carolina, I'll do Skype. But I don't do therapy online.
Okay.
I do, because I have a lot of college kids that will meet with me during the summer, for example, or they'll bomb out of college and they'll be here for a little while and then they'll go back to Chapel Hill or to Wake Forest or wherever it is, and we'll use Skype as a way of continuing the therapeutic relationship to check in, make sure they're still on the rails.
Yeah, and it's also called distance counseling, depending on your licensure. So we're licensed to practice in North Carolina. So anybody within North Carolina, we could see through distance counseling.
So now, what kind of experience, of success rather, have you experienced in using geek therapy, in using these models as something to use to counsel people with?
So one example, the most simple example, is someone comes to you because they know that you know about this, and they already feel more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's easier to get into the difficult stuff. With kids, for example, who like to play video games. Video games are just full of analogies that you can use on rule setting and social skills. And it's really simple once you start speaking their language. Maybe a teacher was telling them to do something a certain way, or their parents are talking to them and they don't understand. But once I start talking about points and gamifying their situation, you know, creating these different scenarios and how they would do it if it were a video game, or how they would do it if it were a story from a movie, and or what would another character do.
You're speaking their language.
Absolutely.
They understand.
Yep.
They can, okay.
And we're calling it geek therapy here, but to broaden it up, we're in a tradition called positive psychology. And for the past 15 years, there's been a lot of research on aspects of positive psychology that have a lot of research backing. So the outcomes in terms of using those elements are very strong, very robust. So it's grounded in a tradition that has a lot of support. And we've seen that certainly in our practice, a lot of good outcome from the people that we see.
Jamie called but couldn't hold. She wants to know if you do, any of you do, couples therapy, because she's the geek, he is not, and they have to find some middle ground. Interesting question.
I specialize in culture and identity issues, and that's one of those things that cause a lot of conflict in people's lives. You know, feeling different or feeling that they're not understood. Mm-hmm. And being able to bridge that gap between two people, absolutely.
You know, with Southeast Psych at large, I mean, we have 30, 32 clinicians that sees every issue you can think of.
Mm-hmm. So Jonathan Feather,
Nick Valadez, he's couples. His caricature is Robin, mine's Batman, and our offices are right next to each other.
That's a whole other show, Robin. Tom, put your headphones back on. Tom in York, South Carolina. Tom, welcome.
Good morning. I'd like to ask the gentleman, is being a geek gender flexible? Can women want to be Superman and men want to be Wonder Woman?
Absolutely. I know I've been to a few cons where you see, some people call it crossplay. And I think it's, again, just everybody wants to have fun at this convention and share what they love with other people. And a lot of geeks are just very, very creative. And they have different things that they want to express. And again, Comic-Con is the one place where you can go. Well, I mean, there are many different Comic-Cons. But when you're around these people, you feel comfortable enough to really, truly express yourself. So I think that, yes, and a lot of people do it, and I think it's great.
Okay. Thank you very much. You talked about superheroes, according to Regina, she emails, you talked about superheroes providing a redemption narrative for individuals like Darth Vader. What about those superheroes that have a chaos narrative? Have you found people who identify with the chaos narrative, and how do you integrate that into therapy?
So someone can relate with a positive example or a negative example. So I think someone might see a character and say, wow, I think I feel like that, and I don't want to be like that anymore.
What if I feel like that, and I do want to be like that?
Well, depending on how you go about being chaos, either will allow you to be successful in certain places, but at some point there are boundaries around that, and that's everything in moderation.
And from a therapeutic standpoint, that gives you a lot of handles, you know, a lot of things to touch on and work on, so if that's what they're bringing in, that's what you're working on.
Very quickly, because we're short on time, Eli in Concord, welcome.
Hey, a quick question. I don't know if you've ever seen that video where a guy, he's in a Batman suit, and obviously he gets in a tussle with a guy and ends up getting beat up pretty bad. And I call it the whole sucker punch situation where someone might feel empowered, as you said, when they dress up. And then they take it to the next level and try to fight actual crime.
Right. And that leads into a question also about empowerment. And fitting in. If you don't fit in and you gravitate toward this culture because you don't fit in, does that make you fit in even less?
It can. But in terms of my population, they may be very interested in one specific thing, but I try to chain that. I build on it, and connect them socially, so that they don't feel so different. You feel different if you're alone.
And what about his question? Is there a danger in dressing up like a superhero and then believing that you are the superhero and then getting beat up because you're not the superhero?